I'm just curious, before I get started, how many individuals study sleep or have studied sleep as part of their research or practice? Okay. So this is not unexpected. This is actually a relatively new area for me. As Linda mentioned, most of my research focuses on diet and physical activity. But increasingly, what we're finding when we're working with community members is that we need to take a much more holistic approach. And we've always done that, but we're really taking a much more systematic, holistic approach. So this is one of the reasons why we're starting to study sleep and its effect on health. I obviously want to acknowledge my collaborators. These are all individuals who work with me at San Diego State University and or the University of California at San Diego. And as Linda mentioned, this research is funded by the San Diego Prevention Research Center, which itself is funded by the Centers for Disease Control. We're one of 33 centers in the United States that's focused on academic community partnerships to promote health. So what do we know about sleep? Well, we know that the effects of short and long sleep duration have actually negative health consequences. So when I started this venture, I'm sure as most of you, I thought, well, if we don't get enough sleep, this has negative health implications. But actually, long sleep also has negative health implications. So although there are different definitions in the field, generally short sleep duration, which is considered less than 7 hours, in some cases some people say that less than 6 hours, is estimated at about 15%. And we know individuals with less income, with less education, tend to suffer more from short sleep duration. We also know that individuals who live in urban versus rural areas tend to also suffer from short sleep duration. The prevalence of long sleep, and again, this is operationalized as either 8 or maybe more than 9 hours a night, is estimated at about 9%. And as one might expect, individuals who are unemployed are more likely to suffer from long sleep duration. What do we know in terms of the links between sleep and health? We know that short sleep duration is associated with obesity and chronic illnesses and just general self-reported poor health in young adults. We know also that short and long sleep duration are associated with greater risk for hypertension, coronary heart disease, mortality, although in the literature this is not consistent. And actually, if you look at the literature, there isn't a whole lot out there. I think in 2007 there have been more papers written in just this past year, or published in this past year, than there seems to have been in the last 5 years. However, and I don't necessarily agree with this, and there is not much research in this, but it does not appear that sleep duration has an effect on quality of well-being. But again, this is based on just one study that I was able to find. If you know of others, please let me know, because we're really interested in looking at this further. So some of the primary objectives of this research was really to understand this problem in our population. So the extent to which sleep problems, physician-diagnosed sleep problems are related to various health conditions, and also whether sleep duration specifically is associated with various health conditions. And then also, because really our interest is in health promotion, to really understand the segments of the population from a sociocultural perspective, those individuals who may be suffering more from long or short sleep duration. So this study was actually a community survey. It was a random digital survey that we did with our target community as well as our control community. We sampled from 5 different zip code areas, individuals with Hispanic surnames. Our prevention research center is specifically focused on Latino health. We're actually the only one that has a specific focus on Latino health. So the individuals had to self-identify as being Latino or Hispanic, in most cases Mexicanos in our area of the country, residents in one of the 5 areas, and then adults. We excluded individuals who were over 70, primarily because at this point our center is not focusing on the elderly or personas de tercera edad, but this is something that we're actually changing. And then our response rate is specifically calculated based on the head of household, but where we were also interested in starting to gather information from other individuals in the household. So we did a little bit of snowball sampling just to see the extent to which the snowball sample actually was similar to the other individual. Thank you. So what information? Well, we collected a lot of information on the community survey. I shouldn't say a lot. We didn't want to burden the respondents. in part for the reasons that some people have mentioned before, the literacy rates are obviously a little bit lower in this community. So we tried to keep it short, but I'm not listing all of the information we have on this survey. I'll be providing my website if anybody's interested in accessing some of these data for their own research purposes, because we are about collaborating and sharing of information. So we did collect a variety of demographic information, things that you would normally see. We collected acculturation. We take a multidimensional perspective on acculturation. None of us are satisfied with any of the skills that are out there, but we use what we consider state-of-the-art at this point and are working at trying to develop newer measures. So we are using Mudding's 8-item scale. It's primarily based on language, but it also includes some other items regarding ethnic identity and affiliation with others. Then we collect information on years in the U.S., and at this point, we just did a review of the literature. It seems to be that living 15 years or more in the U.S. seems to be this critical factor. Then the language of the interview, and then birthplace. In our case, normally what we would try and do is collect additional information on generation status, but the population we're working with is right on the border, and so we generally have a dichotomy of either individuals who were born here in the United States or are first-generation immigrants. We also collected information for the first time, actually, in our research looking at social mobility. And so we had 4 items asking the individuals their perceptions of their own financial situation compared with what their financial situation was about 12 months ago, what they anticipate 3 years from now, how they compared to their parents when their parents were their own age, and then what they expect for their future. And the way this is coded is that a higher score represents kind of upward mobility, the way we would normally think about it. And then, again, we thought a lot of different questions we would wanted to have asked about sleep, but, again, given the need to reduce respondent burden, we just asked 2 questions regarding sleep duration. And these were based on items that have been used in the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index, which is looking at average number of hours that people sleep. So the STEM actually includes additional information about not just when you're lying in bed, but when you're actually sleeping. And there is some evidence that people sleep differently on weekends versus weekdays, as I'm sure most of us do. I know I do. In terms of procedures, the interview was conducted in the respondent's language of choice, and consistent with living on a border community, about 60% completed it in Spanish. Now, the interviews, because of literacy levels, lasted anywhere from 20 minutes to 2 hours. And individuals, and that 2 hours is the high, and that's really skewed. We didn't have a lot of individuals. So the average was about 42 minutes for most people to complete the interview. And it was affected by age. So I think very similar to your comment, as the individuals who are a little bit older took a lot longer to complete the survey. Part of it is literacy, but also part of it is just getting accustomed to completing interviews. So what did we find? In terms of our response rate, this is a little bit confusing, but the main thing is just to look at is that we had of the total number of households that we had that were eligible and agreed to consent, which was 989, we had 610 that agreed to participate, which represent a cooperation rate of about 62%. Then our snowball sample, so we did this, and we had to actually stop because we didn't want to continue. We would have continued if we had funding, but we just wanted to complete this part so that we can actually move on to intervention activities. So of the 148 that we actually reached a second individual in the home, we had 62 people, or a cooperation rate of 84. So our final sample represents 672 adults. Here are some of the characteristics of the population, very consistent with the overall profile, at least in terms of age. Similar to a lot of other research, we have mostly more women than men that are agreeing to participate, about half of them that are married, high school educated, is about 61%, 50% or so who are employed. And then if you look at the bottom, this is one categorization scheme that we're using right now with some of our analyses looking at acculturation levels. So we had about 27% of individuals who were U.S.-born and who completed the survey in English. So those represent the individuals who were kind of most acculturated to the U.S. culture. And then we have, going all the way down to the last category, being individuals who are the least acculturated or the least assimilated, those who are Mexican-born, who speak Spanish, and have been in the less than 15 years in the U.S. In terms of our sleep pattern findings, sleep duration ranged anywhere from 4 to 14 hours per night. And this is actually a little bit different from what you see in the literature. So there wasn't as much difference in the number of hours that people are sleeping on work days versus days off. You saw that not everybody is employed, so those individuals who are not employed didn't answer the question about days off. And then in terms of sleep duration, the way we categorized it, so again, this is something that varies in the literature, but based on our operationalization, we had about 30% of the respondents who reported short sleep duration, 52% responded about mid-range, and then 18% who responded a long sleep duration. And among those with short sleep duration, they were more likely to report a physician-diagnosed problem with sleep. So again, this is self-report. This is not validated by any kind of medical record review or consultation with the doctors. This is all based on self-report. So at least from the respondents' perspective, it seems that short sleep seems to be more of a problem in their minds than long sleep duration. So this is pretty intuitive, and we don't know. This is a what we would consider a cross-sectional study. We cannot imply any causality here, but we do see that those individuals who report. So if you look at, I don't have a pointer, do we? I forgot to bring mine. Okay, so if you look at maybe the second column, and I did bold them. So those individuals who reported that they had a physician-diagnosed sleep problem, we see that the prevalence of across all these chronic health conditions, that the prevalence is in some cases double or triple among those who have a physician-diagnosed sleep problem. So, and again, we don't know what came first, the chronic disease or the sleep problem or vice versa. But we know that there seems to be a relationship here, and it's statistically significant. When we look at sleep duration and chronic illness, we find actually most of the problems seem to be, most of the associations between sleep duration and chronic illness are among those with short sleep duration. So I mentioned in the beginning that long sleep duration is also associated with chronic health conditions or chronic problems, but in our study we did not find that to be the case. So it's really the short sleep duration that seems to be associated with greater prevalence of hypertension, greater prevalence of high cholesterol, asthma, arthritis, and depression. What was interesting to us is we did not find an association with sleep duration, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, which are two things that have been pretty consistent in the literature, and cancer was just another one that hasn't necessarily been found in the literature, but one we were interested in. When we look at some sociocultural dimensions, we found that those individuals who reported short sleep duration, or who were categorized in the short sleep duration, tended to be more acculturated, so those having lived here in the U.S., maybe speaking more English and so on, or speaking more English, having lived more time in the U.S., and then also having the higher acculturation score. And remember that we used the Marine scale, so that was based on language use, ethnic identity, and some social interactions. But we didn't find any association with their birthplace. So it didn't matter whether they were born here in the United States or whether they were born in Mexico. There was no association with sleep duration. Then we did some multivariate analyses. So we wanted to control for some factors and look at specifically social mobility and education and so on. So among those with short sleep duration, we actually found that the prevalence of short sleep duration was higher among those with low social mobility, so those people who feel like they're not kind of advancing, compared to those with high social mobility. And then again, we found those same acculturations. So even after controlling for marital status, education, and employment, we found that acculturation and social mobility were still significantly correlated with short sleep duration. And then in long sleep duration, and this is pretty consistent in the literature, we actually found that long sleep duration was higher among those who were married, among those who were unemployed. So those who were long sleep duration were more likely to be unmarried, unemployed, and report high social mobility. So if you kind of starting to get this profile of an individual who, although is reporting high social mobility, is actually not employed and unmarried. And in this case, acculturation was not related. So interesting. We're still trying to, I mean, literally still trying to figure out kind of what this law means. So we wanted to also do some interactions, and I hope this makes sense. I'm still trying to dissect this myself. But if when you look at this, what we tried to do is look at each of the different acculturative groups. So those, remember I had the four different groups. Now this slide only represents those who are the least acculturated, those who are Mexican-born, Spanish-speaking, and have lived in the U.S. less than 15 years. And what we actually found that those who reported low social mobility was associated with short sleep duration, whereas those with high social mobility was associated with long sleep duration. We found a slightly different pattern of results among those who are Mexican-born, Spanish-speaking, but living in the U.S. for more than 15 years. We actually found just that low social mobility was associated with short sleep duration. And then when we look at the other two groups, so those who are more acculturated, those who are Mexican-born, English-speaking, and living in the U.S. for more years, as well as those who were U.S.-born and English-speaking, there was no interaction between acculturation, social mobility, and sleep duration. So just to conclude, we found that the prevalence of short sleep was actually higher than in previous studies. We found that 30% compared to one published study, which is about 15%, and that was based on a national study. Similar to previous studies, we found that short sleep duration was associated with lower socioeconomic status. And consistently with the number of studies, we found that short sleep was associated with a greater prevalence of several health conditions, and those that are really, the Latino community is really impacted by. Among the two least acculturated groups, we found that low social mobility seemed to compound the risk for short sleep duration. And among the least acculturated group, high social mobility was associated with long sleep duration. And long sleep was, as I mentioned, more common among the unmarried and unemployed. Some of the strengths of this research study is it is a random sample of community members, and it is actually one of the first studies that we were able to identify. So if you know of others, please let us know, because I've been searching like mad to look at some of the sociocultural correlates. Some of the limitations that is based on self-report. And I was forced to put this in there because the single ethnic group, I actually don't see this as a limitation because I think we need to go deeper as opposed to broad. But several of my investigators feel that we need to be able to compare with other groups. So we listed that as a limitation. And the conclusions, actually what we're going to be doing is targeting some of this in our research now. So as I mentioned, the San Diego Prevention Research Center is an academic community partnership, and our partners now want us to focus a bit more on mental health, depression, and so on. And so one of the things that we're going to look at is how do we develop an intervention to actually improve sleep so that we can reduce some of the risk of a lot of the health conditions that are affecting the Latino community. Thank you.